Hey, Squad, Kira here. Just wanted to prefix this podcast with some thoughts. Looking at it retrospectively, I realise that there is an opportunity for listeners to perhaps piece together some really genuinely useful information. We listen to a lot of podcasts from athletes around the world, or coaches, and we look at little things and wonder whether they are the major difference. We'll read about the latest session in a magazine and think that's the groundswell change that's going to really going to affect my ultra marathon. We, you know, argue whether a 90-second recovery is better than a 120-second recovery, or that a set of reps should be 6 or 8. We tear down Kipchoge's training week, thinking that that's the real deal, or perhaps Wormsley's training volume is what will make the difference. A slight tweak from 10-day taper to 14-day taper would result in the difference between like a 15-hour UTA and a 14-hour UTA. But realistically, those minor things are not going to make a major change. There is an opportunity just by listening to this information that what Vajan has to say, that you can put into your race execution some intervention that will drastically change the outcome. And there's more potentially in the next 70 minutes for you than any one session would be, or perhaps even months and months of training. The change in mindset and the impact that it could have on race day execution could be hours in the bank. So this is an opportunity in the next 70 minutes to really dial it in and think about practical things that you can do. Take on board a few of the things that Vajan has to say, because I've done it before and I have genuinely seen massive changes in the stopwatch. So sit back and relax and enjoy this one. I loved doing it, and we always love catching up with Vajan. Enjoy your running, everybody, and we'll see you out on the trails. Vajan, there's not a lot of format to this. We kind of started doing these to just talk to our coaches initially in Trail and Ultra Coaches Corner.
We haven't talked to Kelly yet. I need to reply to a message.
Yes, we need to hook up with the famous Kelly Emerson. We've spoken to Andy Dubois.
Yeah, Maddie and Dave.
And Dave Byrne.
All at the same time or all individually?
You've locked horns with Dave Byrne before a few times on the...
There was too much to be all in one, Vajan. We had to go one-on-one.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
And that would be coach fights.
Yeah.
No.
What would we disagree on, Vajan?
You might disagree on some methodologies, but you'd have the same underlying structures to what you were trying to do. So there's more commonality than there is difference.
I love it. So. That's come from my heart as well. It's like you're reading my cheat sheet here. If you were to say in it somewhat a concise manner, maybe a paragraph or so, what are those fundamentals that would make an athlete a proficient athlete? So what is the basic fundamentals that you would tell someone coming to running that would lead to a pretty decent level of success?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a very important question, I think, if you are coaching people. And if you're coming to the sport yourself, you kind of want to know what you need to do and what sort of the steps would be to move towards proficiency. I mean, for me personally, a big thing is having the right why about why you are going about things. So knowing what you are wanting to achieve through your running, because the thing is, you can come to running for so many different reasons. You can come for health, you can come for, you know, weight loss, you can come for performance, you can come for personal development, you can come because you just know that you need to move and that seems like an easy and logical way to do it. And so there's a lot of people who might have radically different ideas about what they're wanting to get from running. So having a clear understanding of what you personally want to get from participating in this activity. So that's a really important thing. And then, I mean, one of the great things in this world is when you put some effort and time into whatever the activity it is, it doesn't really matter what it is, you will become more proficient at it. So running is no different. And obviously we can kind of streamline the process by giving people better direction and better ways to use that time. But I mean, anyone who goes out and starts running and runs more is going to improve considerably for a considerable period of time. So coaching, I think, for me personally, is really trying to get in touch with the person as an individual and see what inspires them, like what has drawn them to this activity, what they can see as some potential benefits or some areas of growth that they're looking to tap into from the sport, and then try and help guide them to use that time they have wisely so they can start moving towards those goals.
So why did you get into running then?
So for me, like a lot of people, I got into running for all the wrong reasons. So when I got into running, it was because I was good at it. And like when people are young, that's often how you find yourself doing an activity. It's not whether it actually is something that you particularly enjoyed or something that you'd ever consciously thought about, but simply when you get success at a young age and you show some capacity for something, then often you'll get positive reinforcement. People will say, wow, you know, you're really fast. You know, you should do some more of that. And so you get some success and that keeps you going. But at some point on that journey, you find that there are going to be obstacles. Like there's no linear progression. It's like you take a few steps forward and then you fall off the cliff and then you climb back out of that hole and then you take a few more steps forward. And so it's when you find yourself in those difficult times that the why becomes really, really important.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing that's going to keep you moving forward when everything seems to be working against you, whether it's injuries or sickness or life or any of those, the myriad things that can happen. And so it took me a long time. So I started running relatively seriously when I was a teenager, like 12, 13, 14, 15. And then I just completely stopped, like stone cold, left the sport, and thought I would never return to it. I thought that it was something that I'd experienced and it didn't have what I was looking for. So I...
What was the break? Like, why did you stop then? Was there injury or was it... What was it that kind of...
No. So it was like misplaced goals. So I was all about outer performance, like the outer achievements. So
yeah.
I was... Yeah, and so at that age, secondary school champs are the most important thing. And so it was all about getting a medal at secondary school champs. And so I prepared all winter, did all my training, did everything I possibly could to turn up on that start line in the best possible shape. And then I got through my heat, no problems. In the semi-final, I made a tactical error, we could say, got myself boxed in. And then I ended up missing the final of my event by like 0.0 something of a second.
So...
There I was, like I put all of my eggs in the basket of getting a medal. That was like the entire goal. That was going to determine whether all of that time spent was a success or a failure.
Yeah.
And hence, because I didn't even make the final, so it was just a total failure.
Okay.
And so because I didn't have any other deeper why as what I was chasing through the sport, it led me just to walk away. I saw my friends were going and doing other things. I mean, there's so many other opportunities for people to do something and express themselves in different ways. And so I just walked away from the sport because I saw that why was I spending so much time doing something where the results were so much of it is out of your hands. Like you can never control if you're going to get sick or injured or how fast the other runners go. So if your goal is all about trying to win the race or get a medal or get on the podium or do any of those things, so much of that is actually out of your control.
Yeah.
And so in some ways that leaves you feeling powerless. Like if you turn up to the race and you know that there's 10 other good runners that you're really worried about, then you get stressed out and it's not a pleasant experience because you're worrying about things that you can't control. You're worrying about all of the other runners in the race. And so it took me many years of journeying and searching until I found my way coming back to the sport, but just seeing it as a completely different vehicle. Like it was no longer about trying to win. It was no longer trying to beat people and get medals. Like I now saw it was like a way to develop. It was a way to like grow as an individual. It was a way to challenge myself and to see what was possible for me in my life.
So what drew you back in then? Like, I mean, obviously the why changed, but what made you put the shoes on in the first place?
Yeah, so I mean, first of all, when I left the sport of running, When you start doing something, often there's a pure motivation there. So when I started enjoying running as a kid, there was a real purity to it. Like, it was never about trying to be the best or win or do anything like that. So I just ran because it felt good. The feeling of moving quickly across the ground under your own power, it is a magical feeling, being out in the elements and being connected and being present in that moment. So there's so many amazing things. But the way that we structure competitive sports in the world and the way we value performance and the way we sort of set up an idea that being a champion is really the highest good, or being a star in your chosen activity is really what you should be aiming for, means that everyone nearly is doomed to failure. So everyone who gets into the sport, if it's for those goals, there's only going to be one person who's going to be the greatest runner in the world at any one moment. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be an incredibly fleeting moment as well. So when I came back to running, I'd been on a great journey of trying to discover what gave life meaning for me, and what I was trying to find was some deeper purpose in my life, really, we could say. And so I found that through meditation, and so that's been a really key thing for me, which is meditation, for those of you who don't practice, is just simply the practice of learning to still and calm your mind and just sit in the presence of now, just be completely in the moment. So it's
you're running?
You can. I mean, you can find it when you're doing many things, but it's like learning the skills and learning how to approach running from that point of view. And so I started meditating when I was 18 and 1998, and then I spent a couple of years just really deepening my practice, and then like around the year 2000 I started to get inspired to do something to challenge myself physically. And so I saw some other people in my spiritual community were taking part in running, and they were talking about it in a really different way though than that I'd looked at it before, because for me it was all about competition and trying to be the best, and they had this concept of self-transcendence. Mm-hmm. Which is a much more personal way of approaching any activity. It's taking where you are here and now and trying to see, okay, can I take one step further? Can I become a little bit fitter? Can I become a little bit stronger? Can I become a little bit kinder? You can apply it to absolutely any area of your life. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'd always found some joy from running as a kid. So I thought, you know, maybe I can get back into it, but like do it from a different coming from a different mindset and with a different philosophy, and maybe find that why that I couldn't find all of those years before.
Mm-hmm. That's a little bit of the Sri Shinmoy angle coming through. You are, a monk, a practicing monk. Sri Shinmoy, obviously, to a lot of runners, they'll know the name for their hosting in Australasia a lot of the endurance events, 24-hour timed events and those sorts of events.
Yep.
And that philosophy of self-transcendence through extreme endurance, the famous run of self-transcendence in New York.
Yep.
How many miles is that?
So that is 3,100 miles. And I think that one of the important things to know, though, is that self-transcendence exists on every single possible level. So if you've never ran before, for you running around your block, that is a huge amount of self-transcendence. And I mean, when you start getting to those longer events, these are people who've spent many years practicing the art of self-transcendence. So it's always like, okay, this is where I'm at now. Like, how far can I possibly go? And the amazing thing to see is actually how far people can possibly go. When you see people out there running those sorts of distances, and even more than the running, because I think when you start talking about these huge distances, it's no longer just a physical event, it's so much more an inner journey, and it's a opportunity to really dive within yourself and see what really drives you, what really motivates you, what really can allow you to keep taking those steps day after day. And It really is a remarkable thing. And so I'm lucky that I've been part of a community of people who value that practice, the practice of trying to take one step beyond. And that's always encouraged me. And I mean, for me as well, Sri Chinmoy was an amazing example of his own philosophy. He constantly throughout his life was always looking for new ways to challenge himself, to become better, to really manifest some of the good qualities that he embodied. But I mean, for each of us, we've got so many amazing qualities, and taking the time and making the effort to try and challenge ourselves to bring forward those, the best within us, is an incredibly worthwhile journey, I believe.
Does it have to be running, or can I like,
no,
I make sweet mountain bike jumps about it?
Yeah, I mean, like for you, Kerry, I know you love sweet mountain bike jumps. So, and you know, when you really pull off just the sweetest of the sweet mountain bike jumps,
there were some good ones today, man.
Yeah, that feeling, because that feeling, like if you look at yourself 2 or 3 years ago when you were not pulling off such sweet mountain bike jumps, when you were just learning the art of pulling off sweet mountain bike jumps,
yeah,
it's like what's satisfying is not how sweet your mountain bike jumps are. Like that's not the goal. The goal is to see progress. Like when you're feeling like, wow, you know, I couldn't do that. Like 6 weeks ago, I wasn't as good, you know, or 2 years ago, I was nowhere near as good.
Yep.
You know, and that's the wonderful feeling. I think it's that feeling of progress. When you feel like you're making progress in something, whatever it is, it gives you a sense of meaning and purpose. It's like you're moving towards something. You're moving towards a better version of yourself, or you're moving towards a future that can't quite be seen yet, but you have a feeling that because you've chosen a particular goal, you know, for you, sweet mountain bike jumps, for you, there's some future out there where you're pulling off amazing sweet mountain bike jumps. And so when you're moving towards that, that's a powerful thing.
I wish you could see some of them. They are moments. They're beautiful moments.
Yeah, I hear it's like gravity stops. It's like the whole world becomes incredibly slow and peaceful.
So true, because they feel like both really fast but also really slow. Like,
yeah,
I did a jump earlier today. I feel like I'm still up there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
We've gotten distracted. So what if there isn't progression, Vajan? There's going to be a time where you're potentially not running better by the measure that you set upon yourself. I know you're a competitive human, and you've come to Tarawera Ultra and you've been second, you've been third, you've been fourth, fifth.
I was also first, and I'm the defending champion in the 62-kilometer race.
You won that one.
So I snuck that one in just before they ended it, so no one can ever take that away from me. So
I think
Doesn't matter what happens now, I've got that one in the bag, unless they bring the 62K back.
I can't see that happening.
No.
But there's a situation here where that transcendence you speak of, the betterment of self, may not necessarily come through competition for you. So there has to be a future in the sport where you're accepting of a progression for yourself, some spiritual, the why that you talk about, that you feel like you're still pushing a boundary, still achieving something with the sport.
Yeah. So for me, as I've taken this journey of running, I mean, I've been doing it for more than, like, at a serious level for 20 years now. And obviously, at some point, you know, there's going to be some diminishing returns when it comes to pure physical performance.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's so many other aspects to what running means to me that are completely not related to the physical performance side of things. So, like, a good example, I had a really nice experience a few weeks ago. Every Friday for quite some time, I've gone to a particular hill in Christchurch every Friday, and I do some hill sprints, some short hill sprints, like 7, 8 of them, 9 of them, 10 to 15 seconds, like full noise, full gas up a really steep hill. And a few weeks ago, a lady who lived halfway up the hill, she was coming out to her car, and she just said to me, you know, how many years have you been coming and doing this for? And I thought to myself, oh, maybe 5 or 6. She said, no, much longer than that. And when I look back, I thought, oh yeah, it's probably more like 15 years. So for 15 years, when I'm in Christchurch, I drive to this hill, I do a good warm up, I sprint up it 7 or 8 times. And so, and she said to me as well, oh, over the years, you've brought so many different people here to do this workout. Like, where are they now? Like, why did they not stick with it? And I really thought that really got me thinking deeply, like, yeah, what do I get out of this? Because there's something more than just doing the workout. Like, there's obviously the discipline, to come and do something that's challenging, like on a weekly basis. So sprinting up the hill, it's not an easy thing to do. And then I was thinking as well, like, there's something about that discipline, but it's also, there's something about how it makes me feel. It makes me feel like I'm still a young, dynamic, vibrant individual. Because the fact that I can go and sprint up a hill, I mean, how many people in the world could say that, that they could just turn up and sprint up a hill 7 or 8 times? There's just to have the physical capacity still to do that.
Yeah.
And in some way, it just keeps me feeling, there's something about the dynamism of it, the explosiveness of it. And, mm-hmm. and it keeps me feeling incredibly young. And so I think I can imagine myself in another 20 years when I'm turning 60. Like if I could turn up on my 60th birthday, if it was a Friday, let's say, to that hill and sprint up it 7 or 8 times, I would be the happiest man. That would be just so awesome. Yeah, to be able to do that.
I'm going to join you for that, Margin. I think that's it. That's a date. We'll make it happen.
She'd do a good job of it.
Yeah.
Barclays would catch fire, so I'd happily watch.
So I mean, just in that one small thing, like I can see that there's so much room still to find meaning and purpose in my running without it being like about seconds, without it being about placings and performances.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've felt that before, like when there have been races, I've had a few races in my career where I've had to drop out with an injury. And what I found was the thing that I really missed, like looking back on it after the race, was that I didn't get to push myself. I didn't get to go into that place where you're really testing yourself. It wasn't that I missed being on the podium. It was like, it wasn't like, oh no, that's so sad. I didn't get to, you know, be on the podium and have a good performance. It was, I simply missed the fact that I had prepared mentally that I was going to get to a place where I was going to really be feeling challenged, and I was going to be feeling like, okay, there's parts of me, like my body, and that are wanting me to stop, and they're giving me messages saying, hey, you know, come on, calm down, like let's do something else. But it's in those moments where you really, really push to your limits. And you keep moving forward and you keep pushing against them and you don't accept the easy option. Those moments, I can have those when I'm 60. I can have them when I'm 80, you know. Yeah. Like just to get around the course at some point, like ahead of the cutoffs, will be an epic achievement. And so, yeah, I don't really feel like there's going to be a moment where I say, well, I'm never going to run as fast as I have in the past, so I'm just going to walk away, because I've already done that and I've already walked away and I found myself coming back, but you know, with newfound enthusiasm and new ideas, which has been
that self-exploration good. Thing of finding yourself in those dark moments when you're pushed to the fringe of what you're, you know, have previously done. It's pretty easy to go for a run around a jog the block that you've done, you know, 100 times, but go into an ultra marathon race, bury yourself, be at hour 15 of something, and you finally arrive to that point that seemed like it was the purpose of doing the exercise in the first place.
Yeah.
And that can be liberating.
Yeah, I always think an ultra marathon is a huge amount of preparation for one moment, because there's going to come a moment for everyone where you know, you could say that there's some people have a few moments, but for everyone, there's one moment where you're really stretched. It's like you've stretched out your awareness. It's like getting really thin and there's like holes appearing in it. And like, you're not quite sure if you can hold the whole thing together. It's like, am I just going to just like disintegrate? Am I just going to like collapse onto the ground at some point here? And it's like stretching yourself out and then getting through that experience. It's, I mean, the great thing about reality in some ways is that all there exists and all there ever will exist is the here and now, just simply this moment. Like this is the moment where the universe began. This is the moment where the universe will end. It will always be just this moment. And so all of the pain, all of the suffering that you go through, you know, all of the challenges that you're going through in your race, they only exist in that moment. And as soon as that moment's gone, they've gone forever. They're like the dinosaurs. They're like, you know, the pyramids, everything. They'll just disappear behind you. And so learning to be able to be in that moment and to be able to withstand the difficulties that can exist in the moment, in the here and now, but also not holding on to them. It's not like not grasping onto them or not wishing that they were somehow different, just learning to experience and accept the here and now is such a powerful, powerful thing, because there's going to be times when life is going to knock you down way harder then any ultra marathon can knock you down, you know, whether it's illness or, you know, family issues or job issues or whatever it is. There's going to be a time where you just get absolutely destroyed by life. And if you have never experienced what that feels like, just to be in the here and now, just with an untold amount of suffering or difficulty, which you don't know how to deal with, it's like, how do you deal? You've got no practice for that. Whereas those wondrous people who have seen value in going out and doing something incredibly difficult, they have made themselves resilient. They have made themselves capable of withstanding a whole bunch of difficulty, a whole bunch of self-imposed difficulty as well. And so by doing that, I think that's going to set you up to really live a life that's going to have some meaning. It's going to be a powerful life.
I love the way that you speak about your running, Vajan, and the mindset and all of that sort of stuff. Dave Byrne was really interesting, and he spoke about embracing the suffering. What are yours, like, you know, you've talked with, I love your stories that you've shared with me before about some of the skills or tools that you use to build resilience or things that you use in those moments when things are tough. What are some of those strategies that have worked for you that you'll go to?
So big first one for me is the power of acceptance. Mm-hmm. It's like when we accept what is actually going on, what we've taken on. And for all of those of us who are actually ultra marathoners or even runners of any description, we have to remember that this is our choice. We have chosen to be out there doing that activity. So all of the difficulties, all of the problems, we need to take responsibility for those. So we need to, first of all, accept that this is part of the game. And I think in some ways, first of all, accepting the experience is a really key thing, because it's through accepting it that we start to move through it. If you resist the experience, so the experience of running is often sort of an ever-increasing sense of discomfort. So as you start the race, you feel pretty good. And as you start moving along, you start to feel a little bit of discomfort, and then that increases. And the shorter races, obviously, increases much more quickly. The longer races, it increases more gradually. But then at some level, it lasts for a lot longer. So that's also incredibly difficult. And so accepting that experience as those feelings of fatigue and tiredness or boredom or whatever it is, just simply accepting them, because they are part of the journey that you're taking to get to the finish line. And so, because the thing is, when you don't accept things, there are a lot of people who don't want to accept these feelings, and they're the people who mentally have already checked out of the race. Mm-hmm. So they're already thinking to themselves, God, why on earth did I sign up for this event? This is just absolutely horrible. And when you start thinking like that, when you start sort of mentally checking out, it takes away all of your power. It takes away all of your strength and your determination and your willpower and all of those things that you actually need to keep going. So that for me is really important. So first of all, I will choose to accept all of the experiences that I'm going to come across on my journey from the beginning to the end of that race. So I've accepted them. So now I'm in the moment. There's things going on. I'm not feeling great at that moment. It's like, okay, what can I do? So I can either focus on the negative sensations. So obviously there's going to be parts of your body that aren't feeling great. So your legs might not be feeling good. Your digestion might not be feeling good. But in those moments, I can also choose how I want to respond or how I want to approach it. So a big thing for me is, like, I have a few qualities that I really find really, really useful in difficult moments. And so one of those would be gratitude. So when I'm grateful for the experience I'm having, or I'm grateful for the capacity even to be out there having that experience, I mean, there's going to become a time in your life when you look back on those moments when you're in just the absolute deepest, darkest moments in your race, you'll look at that moment and you'll think, my God, that was one of the most beautiful things I've ever done. Like, I cannot believe I had that capacity. I cannot believe I could actually do that. Like, for anyone who's run, you know, 100 kilometers, there'll become a time when you look back and you will not believe that you were actually capable of doing that. So there's something wonderful about learning to be grateful in the moment rather than always having to look back. It's like a lot of us don't appreciate our running when we're healthy and fit. Mm. And then we get injured. And then we think, oh my God, I would just give anything to be able to go out and do a workout. Mm. And it's often people, when they are fit and healthy, they dread doing their workouts. They think, oh God, I've got to go do hill repeats, or Kerry's got me doing a 5K time trial. God, you know, I just really don't want to do this. But yeah, as soon as you take that away from them, the capacity to actually do it, they would give you anything for Kerry to be there screaming at them, or riding his bike and, you know, singing The Gambler or whatever he likes to sing when he's...
What? Yeah, that's happened. Yeah, The Gambler.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So having some gratitude, because you can always find something to be grateful about, because things could always be worse. So, like, say you're running along and, you know, your stomach's really bad. You can think, oh, well, at least I don't have the stitch. Like, that's something. Like, you don't have the stitch and a bad stomach at the same time. So things could be much worse. You know, you could, you know, your feet or your quads might be completely shot, but it's like, well, at least I don't have bad chafing. Like, that's something. Like, if you had bad chafing.
You found, you said if you find negative stimulus,
yeah,
try and search for some positive stimulus. So perhaps look for three things.
Yeah, in the immediate look around. Like, there could always be around you, like, another runner who there's something good to be seen in that person. You know, even if it's just how funky their socks are, or, you know, how well they put together their outfit. Like, that's something. It's like, wow, I'm really happy to be running with this person. They've put themselves together really nicely today. Or you could look around and say, wow, like, I'm in this beautiful place. And, you know, there's some things going wrong. But because the thing is, whatever you put your attention on and your awareness on, you give it strength. So it's like a thought only exists when you give it your attention. A thought otherwise is just like a cloud blowing in the wind, you know, blowing across the sky. If you don't give a thought any attention, it just drifts away. And so if the thought's telling you, oh my God, my quads are so shot, you know, this is terrible. Because if you put all of your attention onto how bad your quads feel, you just get in a negative spiral. You just think, oh my God, yeah, they're really bad. Like, I don't know what I've done here. I think I've just ruined them. They're just completely ruined. And how does that help you? That doesn't help you. You just get in a really bad negative space there. Whereas if you can start looking around and seeing some positive things around you or within you. Your environment, anything. Like, positivity is such a powerful thing. It's like, what's the famous saying? It's like, if you can find your why, you can put up with any how. So it's that thing, like, if you can find some meaning and purpose in what you're doing, it doesn't matter how difficult it is. You can go through absolute devastation and tragedy if you have a powerful enough why.
Yeah, some good stuff. I think I took on board similar speech from you some years ago, and then went on to win an unimportant race that no one's ever heard of. So,
which was that? Was that Great Ocean Walk 100?
That's a seriously competitive race, and some of the best athletes in Australasia have won that.
I know, but haven't you won it as well recently?
I've won a lot of things, but I don't like to.
2016. It was a beautiful year that year.
It was a beautiful 2017? Year. Was it 20? No, it was 2016.
Nah, I feel like it was later than that. It doesn't really matter.
It was 2016.
Look, if you're not, you don't want to be measured by your successes, because the same people will be there to measure you by your failures as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I always think it's really interesting, because I think people, or human beings, we often get a feeling for something before we actually have a rational understanding of why we have a feeling for something. So I've been thinking about this over the last several months. And so it's like when you see, it's like it comes from the animal kingdom or nature. You see animals acting in a way, you know, like a good example is wolves. You know, when wolves are having like a power struggle, you know, they're fighting. And then at the end of the fight, they don't want to kill each other. So one of them lies on his back and presents his throat to the other one. And we look at it and we kind of say, oh, I can see what he's doing. Like, he's saying, okay, you've beaten me. Like, you know, I'm making myself defenseless. You know, you can kill me. And it looks like the other wolf says, I could kill you, but I'm not going to, because I might need you in the future. But so the thing is, the wolves aren't thinking these things. So the wolves are just acting out their natural behaviors. So there's some natural behaviors in nature that have value and are sensible and, you know, and make these animals' lives better and make their societies work better. The wolf society works better when you don't kill each other. And so they know how to do these things without having a rational understanding of it. And so as human beings, sometimes we give way too much credit to the rational part of our mind. And so when we think, oh, you know, I'd like to do an ultra marathon, you know, the feeling that came to us first of all was something much deeper than just our mind. We didn't sit there rationalizing and thinking, well, I could do a triathlon, I could focus on my mountain biking, I could become a professional golfer. And we don't go through and we just see some ultra marathoners one day, or we hear about some event and we get this feeling like, oh, this is something I would like to do. We feel that there's something in that event for us. And then I was thinking, like, what is it? What is it? Because it's not about the performance. It's not about being able to put it up on social media. All of these things comes much later. But I think when we see these events and we see people who have done these events, we see some quality that they're manifesting that we realize that we need more of in our own lives. So there's something within us, some innate intelligence that we see someone has finished a 100-kilometer race. And we see like, wow, that's really amazing. And there's something in that that I can't put my finger on. I can't explain it, but I know I need to do that thing. And so I think most people have got into ultramarathons. That's what happened. And then along the way, there's all these other rationalizations and we get different ideas. But I think when you see people taking on a big challenge, it's like we're feeling within us that we, like maybe we need more discipline. And I mean, most of us need more discipline. So maybe it was that, or we need more courage. And so we see these people doing this event and we somehow innately know that to do that event would require me to really step out of my comfort zone and really become incredibly courageous. Like even just signing up for the event requires that. And then we see, okay, I need more discipline in my life. And we don't think, oh, well, I need to do a course in being more disciplined. That's not how reality works. It's like we feel, okay, there's something in what those people are doing that if I do it as well, I would gain some more discipline in my life. I would gain more courage. I would gain whatever it is that you're somehow needing more of, you're needing to develop in your own life. I think people see that reflected in others who are doing challenging things in this example. And they just feel like, okay, I need to do this. I don't really know why I need to do this, but there's something in it. And I think that ties back to the why, because if you can actually sit down with someone and actually talk to them, okay, you've decided you want to do a 100-kilometer race. Like, why is that? And they might start off on the surface level and they might say, well, you know, I need to get a bit fitter. But that's not really the why. Like, there's something deeper than that. There's something deeper than that. And if you get to some certain point, I think if you can have that level of self-reflection and you can see, okay, I'm doing this because, you know, I need to pull myself together. I'm not the person I could be, you know, for my family, for my community, for humanity. It's like we all, I think, realize that we're just not sufficient as we are. We could all be so much better. And it's not saying that, you know, you need to be really harsh on yourself, but it's realizing that you, Kerry, no matter how great you are right now, you know deep within you that there's some things in your behavior that just could be better. Like you could be a more powerful force for good in this world if you just could pull yourself together a little bit more, you know, if you could just be that little bit more kind. And it's, I think that is what we're looking for. Like this gets down to really, really the base levels of meaning and purpose in your life. It's like, if you want to be a happy person, at Harvard Business School, their most popular course is this Happiness 101. And they've been doing the studies on happiness for a really long time. So they've got amazing information and data about what actually makes people happy. But of all the potential things that you can work on, like, you know, there's a myriad of different things. One thing shines out above everything else, and that is having
likes,
meaning.
Likes on social media.
It is not.
No.
That's what it is.
Oh, my
goodness, Kerry. Did I hear him say that? Did he say that?
He did not say that.
I'm pretty
that.
Sure. Was that what the answer was?
The answer is meaning. And so meaning is really funny because meaning, you can't measure meaning. Like, you can't measure why something feels meaningful, because something will feel meaningful for some person, but it won't feel meaningful for someone else. It's something that I think it's tied in with your conscience, because, you know, your conscience is constantly there in the background. Like, you know, it may wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, Kerry, what you did today, you really shouldn't have done that, Kerry. And you can say to all you want, Hey, shut up. Oh. Don't talk to me like that. But it's part of you and it's telling you these things. And so it's like there's some part of you that it's like a compass that points towards meaning. And when you're doing something that's meaningful, and it's like when I look at you and I see you as a person and how your life has changed, like with what you do and what you offer to the world, I can see that you're getting so much more meaning doing what you're doing now. And it's not just that you have a flash, you know, house and you have a beautiful squad run vehicle,
yeah,
and you have some like absolute beautiful carpet, you know, you've got all of those outer trappings.
Yep.
But those are not the things that are making you happy. It's like you're finding, because, you know, as many people know, you were, you know, a highly paid computer guy in the past, you know, just living the dream. But that didn't give you the meaning.
No meaning. I can tell that
did not have the meaning. But no. now that you've found a way to share your love and inspiration with a community of people and be involved in their journey towards their own greatness, it's like, how meaningful does it feel? Like, it seems...
I put the mean in meaning.
Yeah, that is a beautiful thing, Kerry. You are the guy who came and put the mean in meaning.
So, question then, getting back to the strange purpose of all of this.
Yes.
I've often thought, if you take a step back from our understanding of the sport and how we're woven through it, it seems, if you excuse the term, fucking pointless to stand at Scenic World and go for a 100K beat down on yourself to arrive at the exact same point, exhausted, potentially 26 hours later. The if you were to write that experience, I'm going to go do that, people would be like, why on earth are you doing that? You could spend that time on the couch. You could spend that time doing constructive things around the house. There's so many different things you could do. Why are people clamoring to do this meaningless thing that is hard and painful and, you know, fatiguing? And it seems really weird, but we can get 7,000 people to do it every year.
Yeah. And that all comes from that meaning, like, because people don't know why, they can't put their finger on it, but somehow it provides some purpose and meaning to their lives. And the thing that's really great about what you said as well is that they start at one place, they return back to that exact same place. But the thing is, although they're tired, they're exhausted, they're filthy, they've got all of these outer things have changed, there's something incredibly valuable to them personally about that experience, because they know when they come back to that finish line that they will not be the same person they were when they started that race. And that, for me, has always been why I've loved the experience of preparing for and doing an event with other people, because it pushes you into this place where when you come back to that start line, you are not the same person who started the race. You're that little bit more humble. You're that little bit more connected with that land or with the people around you and with your own limitations, because it's so rare for people to consciously want to go out there and stare at the deepest, darkest parts of their being. And this is what you find out on the trail after, you know, like, I used to always remember after I'd finish at Ultra Trail Australia, I'd go and stand at Echo Point and watch all the runners going down those stairs into the Jameson Valley in the like 10 o'clock at night. And I was just in awe of these people. I was like, my God, like the bravery and the courage it takes to stand at Echo Point when you know your bed is like probably within a few kilometers. You could just instead walk up back into Katoomba, wherever you're staying, it's all there, it's all waiting for you. You've probably got the key in your pocket, you could just go there right now. But instead they're choosing to head down into the dark, dark night, into the bottom of the Jameson Valley, and just haul their way up Kadumba Pass. And that for me is just an incredibly inspiring thing to see. People willing to go into that, because it was such a beautiful metaphor as well. It's like they're descending just into the pure darkness. And there's something terrifying about that. It's like human beings, we innately know heading into some deep, dark place. It's like you never know what you're going to find down there. And here these people cheerfully just heading.
Why? Why are you doing this?
I think you probably would get told.
I think sometimes we ourselves don't even know. It's like each of those people who was in that moment heading down there, they felt this pull to keep moving forward. They felt this pull to keep heading towards this completely arbitrary goal that they'd set themselves. Mm-hmm. But somehow they knew that by doing that, it was going to make them a better version of themselves. So they would finish and they would have chipped off some of those parts of their being that weren't serving them, that were holding them back, that were limiting them. All of those things that you need to do some hard work to get through those, to get rid of those parts of ourselves.
You've been part of Ultra Trail Australia and North Face for quite quite some time. You're part of, you know, we'd say AROC family. Your what's your more recently, what's your role been with UTA?
So I've been the assistant to the what would you call that guy, Mr. Abhinandan? He's got a very important role anyway, and he gets me to do a whole bunch of things. So I help with the volunteer deployments, the deployment clusters. That's what we're talking about.
How many volunteers do we have for UTA?
A lot. What is it? How many did we have last year? 600, 700 or something?
700, I think, in total.
Yeah.
Including those that, you know, event professionals will like to call ourselves to deliver that event. Take some 700 people. So.
Yeah, and that for me has been such a richly rewarding experience to come back to that race. And the last few years, I've been lucky to be able to run the 22K on the is it on the Friday or the Thursday?
Friday.
And then during the race itself, I'd be out looking after marshals in different areas of the course and just supporting the runners and everyone out there. And it's just such a beautiful thing to be on the other side, because so many times as an athlete, it's those small moments of encouragement that just mean so much out there on the course. And you never know who it's going to be or what someone's going to say to you that's going to really help carry you through those next few miles. And so to be out there on the course and to be able to encourage people and share some love and support, it's just been an amazing experience. So, yeah, I hope we can get back over in October to do it all again.
I was on the phone with Tom Landon-Smith just before speaking to you, and I mentioned that I was going to be speaking to you, and I felt like he wanted to be part of an overlap scenario where he got to speak to you, because you're one of Tom's favorite human beings. He said to ask you, I think roughly the terms was that you have a unique perspective of history and, you know, past lives and what has been before. What do you predict for the future with regard to Ultra Trail Australia?
Well, the big thing I have to say is that human beings are absolutely hopeless in making predictions. I mean, that's the one thing that you see. I mean, like, even if we look at this current situation with this pandemic, the amount of experts that have come out and thrown out their expert opinions, which have been shown just to be absolutely blatantly wrong, it's just like you realize that even people who know a lot about things, it's really difficult to predict the future. So
Tom would like this answer already.
So I wouldn't like to be able to say anything in particular, but I know that if that race carries on, when it does carry on, the one thing I can guarantee is the feeling at that race and the feeling of family that Tom manages to create, that is just something to behold. And to have been able to be part of that family and to share that with all of the guests and the runners and our friends and family who come and take part has just been just an absolute gift. So as long as my prediction is, long as Tom Landon-Smith is involved in that race, it'll be an amazing experience for everyone who turns up. That's my prediction.
I wholeheartedly agree with you in that regard. I think that there's something about that. He doesn't probably want to be considered a leader, but that leadership role that he has comes through to the team that delivers it, the marshals that help host it, and through to the athletes that now love it for over 10 years. So we can hope that continues. I was looking at something, you know, Richard Feynman.
Oh, yes, I do know of Richard Feynman, yes.
We get on these really interesting philosophical discussions, Vajan, you and I.
Yes.
Are you aware of his a bit of information that he would put forward to a future civilization? There was he asked a university if there was some cataclysmic event and all scientific knowledge was destroyed, what is the one bit of information that you would pass on to a generation of creatures that comes after us that contains the most information in the fewest words?
And you would like me to answer this question?
Well,
or you were going to tell me your answer. Is that what was going on here?
Would you like to hear his answer before you answer?
No. Vajan, go first.
What is the bit of information that a future civilization, be it, you know, human or other, would you leave something, or would you let them work it out? What tasty treat?
That is a very good question. I would say that the most important bit of information that I have learned, that everything you're looking for is here and now. It's already here. It's right here and now. Everything that you're looking for is here and now. All the love, all the joy, all the connection, all the purpose, all the meaning, all the compassion, the generosity, the kindness, it's all here and now. So if they were looking for it in some other place, they perhaps would spend a long time without finding it. If they were looking for it in the future, they were looking for it in the past, they wouldn't find it. And so if they could be present enough to actually connect through the here and now and into themselves, and they might perhaps find that all of these things existed inside of them.
It's a subtle troll too, because it's a message from the past to be present. So, there's a little quantum physics tied into that answer. That's
there is.
I was whoever's received that message. I encourage you, Vajan, I won't tell you, to go out and find out what Feynman did answer to that. And
Ooh,
I suspect
okay.
you'll be a little bit disappointed, but you could see why he'd come up with that answer. I like yours better.
Was it more scientific?
It was way more sciencey. Which is disappointing because he's a very clever man. Now, I have seen you get down. I've seen a quantum physicist ask if you were a quantum physicist.
That was a beautiful moment. That was probably one of the highlights of my ultra running career, actually, I have to say.
You know a lot of things. You really do know a lot of things. I don't know, understand how you've done it in one lifetime. I don't think.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the secrets actually is to be present, because all of the information that you're looking for is actually existing here and now. It's all around you. But very often, I think one of the great gifts that meditation has given me is the presence, to actually learn to live more and more from the present moment. So many of us unconsciously live from the past or the future, and we don't even realize it. If it's not until you do something like a meditation retreat where you have to try and sit in silence for some number of hours that you realize, my God, my mind is so incredibly busy. And you also realize that nearly all of your thoughts are so helplessly and hopelessly counterproductive, because your mission in that moment is to sit there and to be in the present moment, and suddenly you're thinking about, oh God, next week at work, I've got to do that training program for this person, I've got to do that, and while you're thinking that while you're trying to sit there and be in the present moment. So that is really not a useful way to use your mind's ability to focus. And then just as easily you'll drift back to think, oh God, what happened yesterday, you know, I didn't come across the way I should have, you know, the way I was relating to Ali was just so inappropriate, you know. So all of those thoughts that are in your head, Kerry, you know, they're taking you away.
I thought you're speaking for yourself.
No,
mine is
No, I know Ellie is a saint, and she doesn't need any of these advices.
Oh,
but
totally
Kerry, you know, you and I, we know that the mind of a computer programmer is an incredibly complicated, busy place. It's full of zeros and ones, and just trying to put them in the right places. It's just incredibly difficult.
You are right. This has become a really excellent mindfulness exploration for ultra runners, I think.
Yeah. Yeah,
because you're one of the things I've always thought, Vajan, is I've had coaches when I was training in a lot and heading towards performance objectives, and I've always thought, you know, at one point as an athlete you end up being proficient enough to not require hand holding. You need mentoring really more than anything else.
Yeah,
and that the person that I would choose to steer the ship would be you. That you would be the person that I would use to get information to help steer me in the right direction and improve my performance. You are obviously an incredibly smart human being. You're a capable athlete and a coach as well. You help people on their running journeys. But I think of the many coaches out there, you have a better holistic understanding of the interplay between the mind and the body and in some way, that intangible emotion, the why component.
Mm.
How you're also incredibly hard to track down on an internet sort of a capacity. How are people meant to ask you important questions?
I think they have to go through Squad Run now. I think you've set you up as my official agent to deal with. Because the thing is, I've only got limited time, and I've got a lot of things I'm thinking about. So I need you to filter out all of the unnecessary questions and just give me the good ones. Okay.
So if there are athletes out there that would like to refine their running, perhaps improve their performance, or understand the meaningfulness of what it is they are trying to achieve, they'll get a coach and counselor in you.
Yeah,
I would say Vajan gives really great guidance or insight into mental strategies. I know personally a lot of the stories that Vajan's told me about his running, like the one where you said that you were running up the mountain and you were crying because of the beauty and the effort of that moment. You know, like those stories really resonate. And I love listening to Vajan's storytelling about his.
Not enough people get to hear those awesome stories. Know. That's the sad thing about it. Yeah. No. You see, there's so much of you to give, it's hard to get.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the thing with stories in particular is I think stories are the most powerful way of passing on information to people. So stories have been used since for at least 70,000 years for passing on information. And so it's only very recently that we've decided that it's much better to try and be completely objective and to try and give, measurable information and to try and give it in a very objective manner. Human history has never cared for objective reality. They've cared for stories that explain realities and pass down information that's really, really important. And so Ali, I'm really pleased that you've enjoyed some of my stories. And because each of those stories, I think if you can share some stories from your life where you actually learned something, where you were actually completely engaged in what you were doing, and that you came out of that experience as a slightly different version of yourself. All of those moments, that there's a story in there that can, when you share it with someone else, they can share through. Humanity's got an amazing ability to empathize and to share experience through storytelling. And so even if you never did that thing yourself, you can get a sense of what it felt like, and you can get a sense of that little insight that someone else had through that experience. And hopefully that might just start slowly opening up some little insights in your own life. And so, and when it comes to coaching as well, I just would like to say that I'm a big fan of trying to maximize someone's performances, of course. But more importantly than that, I would love it. Like for me, the greatest thing would be at the end of a training block that the person felt like that they were actually a better version of themselves than they were when they started. So not just physically, but they actually felt like they were more grounded, they were more aware, they were more connected, they were more engaged, they were, you know, a better family member, whatever it is that makes you feel like life is meaningful and important. Because life, we've got to remember, life is incredibly difficult. It's like, seems like, if you look at it objectively, it just seems completely pointless. It just seems full of untold suffering. You and every single person you know and love are going to die, you know, many of them in horrible, tragic ways. And this just seems like between the birth and the death, it's just like potential for an untold series of tragedies. And so that's what some people's lives are like. And it's like, okay, so you need a really strong meaning and purpose to get through that whole thing without it destroying you. And I think if through running, we can help people find ways to become more resilient and to become more connected and engaged. And running actually as well, one thing I think people don't see for themselves often is how you taking on a great challenge and growing as a person, it doesn't just affect you, it actually affects every single person in your life who's connected with you. So if it's, you know, you might be a busy mom and you've got your kids and your husband and you know, your extended family, when you take on a challenge like doing the Tarawera 50k, when you get to that finish line, or when you do the training and the preparation and take the steps that you need to get to that place where you can attempt that challenge, all of those other people gain something so incredibly powerful from you doing that. So I think sometimes we think that it's a selfish thing that we're doing, that when we're off running, we should be, you know, because we're taking time away from those people we love and care about. But instead, I think what you're doing is you're giving them something back, which is even more powerful, because you're showing them that it's possible to change, it's possible to grow, it's possible to do things that are difficult and hard, and to do it in a way that's gracious and selfless, and to make those people around you proud and inspired that you are part of their family. And I think that's just something that's just so unbelievably beautiful and so unbelievably underrated, because like we often think about, oh, wouldn't it be nice if the world was, you know, some sort of wondrous utopia and everyone was nicer and, you know, we made less pollution and we were nicer to the planet and all of these things. And we think it's something that's going to happen somewhere else. It's like some government's going to come up with some idea or technology and it's going to change it. And then that's going to just sort out all of our problems for us. But in fact, it's each of us in our own lives becoming better versions of ourselves. That's how we lift up humanity. So when I do something I've never done before, when I learn to be more gracious, when I learn to be kinder and more humble, that actually lifts up the entire standard of all of humanity and makes the world a better place to live in. And so it's all of those thousands of people multiplying these little marginal gains that they're making on a daily basis. That's how we lift up humanity. Because if we just always are judging ourselves against some utopia that has never existed, that's like the negative way of looking at things. We can say, oh, well, people are still racist and sexist and there's still bigotry and this, that, and the other thing happening. But compared to what? Like compared to how we were 100 years ago? Compared to how we were 50 years ago? Compared to how we were 20 years ago? That's what we need to be looking. We need to be looking at our own progress, not comparing ourselves to something that we have never yet attained.
Do you think this is a computer simulation?
I do not think it's a computer simulation, no.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of people who can, you can explain away a lot of things, but if we put someone, even if they believe the whole thing's just a computer simulation or the whole thing's just, you know, some firing of the neurons and nothing really means anything, like let's put them at the bottom of Kadumba Pass in the middle of the night and then see if they still think it is a computer simulation by the time they get to the finish line of UTA. You know, it's, I think pain and suffering is the one thing that people, no matter how much you try to explain things away, that's a really hard thing to explain away.
What, how important is the collection of experience in existence? The fact that for 13 and a half billion years you weren't, but now you are, and your life isn't a pursuit of accumulating wealth on a financial scale or importance by a power scale. Your life is one of experience. Is it that you'll slide into your grave living as few men have dared to dream?
That is there's some deep words you were dropping there, Kerry, and I'm pleased that you're thinking about these things now.
No, you know, because I've gone very far away from running right now.
No, I mean, the thing is, everything is connected. So how you approach any one aspect of your life also bleeds into your running. It's like how you approach living your life, that will also be in some way how you approach your running, and it will be how you approach your relationship and how you approach every single part of your life. So if you can get the core values better aligned, so if you can really on a deep level get yourself in, like integrate the different parts of your being, because we all know that there's not just one Kerry living inside you, Kerry. There's multiple versions of Kerry. And so some of those versions of Kerry are more, let's say, refined than some versions of Kerry. Like the Kerry, you know, who comes out, you know, when Kerry's been having a few drinks and, you know, that is a different version of the Kerry that's sitting here having this, you know, very high-level philosophical discussion. But it's like, can you get all of those versions of yourself to sort of start pointing towards the same common goal? Can the lower parts of yourself that, you know, wants warmth and food and, you know, a partner and all of those, you know, physical things, you know, can that part of you line up with your mind that's often a little bit sneaky and devious and is thinking of ways, how can Kerry get ahead of all the other version, all the other human beings out there? Like, you know, how can Kerry, you know, fiddle the tax system so he gets more in his pocket at the end? No, but it's like, you know, we all know, I'm just using you as an example because we all love you and, you know, we know you're humble enough and gracious enough that you won't hit us when we see you next. But it's like, If you could learn to integrate all those different parts of yourself, then in every area of life, you would just be an absolute dynamo. You would be so incredibly competent and powerful. And you would just be such a pleasure to be around that it's like, that seems like a worthwhile goal. It's like, can I get my own house in order? Can I like get myself? Because I think actually what did you, like, I was thinking about this some time ago, but I think really what determines the quality of your life is the decisions you make when no one is watching you.
Oh, right. Like true philanthropy is giving without necessarily requiring some reward for doing so.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's many of us who in the big moments when we're in front of the crowd, we say the right thing, we do the right thing, and then we go home, and then like the next morning we know we've got something on and we just sleep in, and we don't respect other people, and we don't act in the way that we actually need to be true to what we believe in. And so trying to get all of those parts of us in line, so the outer, you know, the public face and the private face being totally aligned, you know, when you do that, then I think you have find a level of contentment and peace in your life that often we're lacking, because there's that sort of dichotomy where there's what we say and what we believe, and then what we do, sometimes they're not actually the same thing. And so learning to bring all of those into harmony, that's a game that's actually worth playing, because the rewards are so huge and the game is so challenging and it takes such a long time to master that sort of a game, that's something that you could actually spend your whole life playing that game, and it would actually make for an incredibly meaningful life, and it would actually transform the world along the way, because every single person you came into contact with would have been in contact with someone who was a true, authentic human being. Just when it's like when you have a conversation, like, you know, I've had conversations with you that it just, I've walked away from them and I feel like that was worthwhile. That was just incredibly fulfilling, that conversation we had. Like, not because of what was exactly said or anything like that, but it was just like two human beings really connecting on a fundamentally deep level and really being authentic with each other.
I don't know what it is about talking to you, but sometimes we end up in those places, you and I. And I'm glad that perhaps we've been able to share these with other people that don't often get to talk to Vajin.
Yeah.
I wonder what questions they would have for him.
Oh.
Yeah, well, if you have questions, email them through to Kerry Suter at Squad Run.
I've somehow become a secretary now. Yeah.
No. I know you're too busy. You're too much too busy. You've got so many people you're helping.
You've got sweet mountain bike jumps to do, Vajin.
Busy's not really necessarily a good word, I don't think.
Busy's a horrible word.
Capacity is stretched to pretty thin to help as many people as we can. That's how we see it.
No.
You could frame it with... Yeah, you could frame it with words like busy, but
I think that's really important, actually, to be careful and precise in how you talk about your life and your experiences. Because, like, one thing I find when we talk about running in particular, if you talk about and use the word suffering, pain, hurt, those often have a very negative connotation. And I know for you, Kerry, that was your whole bread box of what running was about. It was about getting out there, hurting yourself, making yourself suffer. It was almost as though you had done some terrible deed at some point in your life, and you felt as though you needed to punish yourself to make up for that. And, you know, maybe this, we might not have enough time to actually go back and look at what that terrible deed was. But Kerry,
this is an interesting one, though. So, okay, let's touch on this. There is something about gritting your teeth and just letting fire flow through you and just attack that finish line or die trying, you know, like the whole dark side, Darth Vader, red lightsaber, get it done. And there's a moment for that, right? There's got to be times where it's worth channeling. If that's how you resonate, get after it.
Yeah, but would you get more out of yourself looking on the flip side and running positively?
Yeah, because that energy, because the things you're talking about, intensity. So for me, it's all about like how we look at that energy, that consciousness, that space that we're entering into. So like for me, that's the place of pure intensity. And like for me, if I can enter into that from a very dynamic, like it's about connecting with all of that dynamism, all of that dynamic energy that we have, and trying to pull all of that and bring all of that to the fore and use that to get to the finish line as quickly as possible. And it's like, we could look at that and say, okay, I'm doing it from a positive place. Or you could say, oh, I'm doing it, this is hurt, this is suffering, I'm in the hurt locker. But I could be in that same sort of level of intensity, but I could say, this is, you know, I love this level of intensity. This is just like I'm living right in my absolute limit of how much intensity I can hold. And I could say, this is challenging. This is like a moment of absolute challenge. And like for me, when I think of a challenge, it's or intensity, these are things that I want to step up to. These are experiences I want to step into. I want to step into the experience of real intensity. I want to step into that place of real being challenged to my absolute limits. But if someone said to me, oh, do you want to just be in an absolute pain cave? Do you want to be in a place where it's just absolute pain and suffering? I'm like, well, that doesn't sound very positive. I just don't like, it kind of seems like a dungeon and there's people whipping me and there's like little horned beings running around. That's a perfectly valid place to go to. And, you know, there's many people who enjoy those experiences. But for me, I feel like I can get that same level of intensity without the little ghoulish beings prodding me with the pitchfork. Like, I can do it from a place of, like, you know, because, like, the cherubs and the angels, they've got wings. They can fly, man. They're like, you know, they don't maybe have the burning fires and the pits of tar and, you know, whatever else. But there's also, you know, there's some intensity there that I enjoy.
Right. Yep. I can understand that. I ran my best races with the blue lightsabers. So I think the times that I was able to channel suffering into the liberating experience of being and appreciate where I was in the moment that I was. And that
Kiri,
I did so beautiful. Ultimately, the stopwatch would say that you did a better job of it that time. So yes, I understand it. I just know a lot of, you know, we talk to a lot of athletes, you know, and coaches that they want to see, you know, an athlete ringing it out on the 400 meter track, you know, and it's not necessarily a pretty thing to watch.
No, but it's like, for me, it's how sustainable is that? Like how many years can you run from that place of being and still want to get back after it year after year? Because I think that's what happens with a lot of people when it's all about that, like, okay, I'm going to, for the next 10 years, just go to the absolute hurt locker 5 times a week, 3 times a week, 2 times a week, whatever. At some point, your whole thought process about running becomes kind of twisted into this place where running and suffering and pain are just synonymous. It's like there's no differentiation. And I don't know if that's, like, to be a lifelong runner, I don't know if that's the best place to come at the process. Yeah. From.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, why Kipchoge is smiling.
Yeah, and that's something, the most beautiful thing to see someone absolutely performing at the highest possible level of human potential, but to be doing it from a place of absolute grace and to be completely present and completely connected with his fellow runners and incredibly humble, incredibly kind and loving to all of those around him. Like, to me, that's just like the greatest possible thing, because I see that he's doing it for the right reasons. He's not doing it for money. He's not doing it for fame even. Like, it's like after he ran the sub 2 hour marathon in Vienna, he said, we need to make this world a running world, because a running world is a happy world. Because for him, he's seen through that, the process of running, he's found that contentment. He's found that place where he knows why he's doing things. He's got the meaning. He's got the purpose. He's not needing to prove anything. He's doing it to push humanity forward.
Lovely. What's for dinner?
That's a very good question. I will have some veggie burgers, I think, for dinner tonight. I've got some.
That's what we're having.
What? Yeah. Unbelievable.
Asterix beyond meat burgers, but they're pea protein burgers that are still veggie burgers.
It's a great thing.
Right when you're in charge.
Synchronicity. There's some synchronicity here, isn't there?
We're going to have the same round sandwich, but we're going to be separate by about 1,500 kilometers.
You'll be enjoying it and thinking of each other.
Yeah. And of course, we better let you go so you can get up early and think about nothing.
Exactly.
Mindfulness, we could all do a better job of it if we tried, but don't try too hard, because that defeats the purpose of it.
Yeah, it's that wonderful state of doing without doing.
Yes. Man, so many people could learn so much from him.
I'm so glad we got to talk to you today. I've missed you.
I'm
going to make your party, and also that we're not at UTA together again, but it's so nice to have another one of these. I always wish that our conversations were recorded, because there's so many absolute gems that people would appreciate hearing from you.
Well, I am incredibly grateful to be able to have a conversation like this with you guys, because normally we would be at UTA, as you were saying, and
yeah.
I always look forward to these moments of sharing and connecting. And in this time of social distancing, it's kind of makes sense, or it seems fitting that we're actually having this conversation via some social network instead of in the flesh. But
we could be in a just one room away doing this, but
yeah,
the gulf of distance has been eroded by our friends at Google, so you'll yeah. have to delete whatever account it is you created to use this mechanism to have some government spy on you.
Kerry, you know me too well.
Yeah, they don't trust you because you've worked it out. That's why. You've worked it out.
Well, I hope everyone who has a listen to this, I hope you're having a wonderful day, and you can move forward in life with some meaning and purpose, or perhaps even just start taking the moments, those moments in your day where you've got a few moments just to sit there and just to be present to what it is that makes you want to do these things that you do. What's driving you? Where are you going?
I love it that people will be listening to this whilst they're out running, and right now they'll hopefully yeah. will think about a few of those things, and hopefully not our voices, but the presence of where they are.
Take note of that moment.
Yeah, and always remember as well, it's a journey. It's we set one goal and we move towards that goal, and when we get to that goal, we realize that goal was not what we were looking for. And so we move the goal somewhere else, and then we move towards that goal. It's the fact that we're moving forwards towards some better future, some better version of ourselves. That's the thing that gives the whole game some purpose and meaning, I think.
Love it. All right, thank you for your time, Varjan. I'll get this
thank you.
The internet. Please look after yourself, and I hope that our lives can intersect again sometime soon.
I'm sure they will.
Wonderful.
We love you, Varjan.
See you, buddy.
Thanks so much, guys. Bye.